welcome to Midlife Woman Radio. I'm Susan Bilheimer. If you'd like to make a comment or suggest a topic, give us a call on our 24-hour vent line. The number is 561-372-1119. That's 561-372-1119. We might just play and discuss your topic or address your comment on the air. You can find us at www.midlifewomanradio.com. www.midlifewomanradio.com. My guest today is Steve Goodman. He's an international authority on college and graduate school admissions. Over the past 20 years, Steve has designed admissions strategies for more than 1,700 applicants to colleges, graduate programs, and business, law, and medical schools. His book is called College Admissions Together, It Takes a Family. It is one of the most referenced college guides for both parents and librarians throughout the United States. We'll have all his contact information on the site. Steve, hi, how are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Okay. Before we start, I would like you to give us some of your contact information so people can reach you or get the book.
Sure. Well, the title of my book, again, is College Admissions Together, It Takes a Family. And it does take a family, and hopefully we'll chat about that a little bit today. And again, my name is Steve Goodman. My website is www.topcolleges.com. My phone is 202-986-9431. And my direct email, in case anyone has any specific questions, is steve@topcolleges.com.
Excellent. So I've been reading a bit about you and really was enjoying looking through your book. But for me, the biggest issue is dealing with my son having gone off to be a freshman in August of this year and the difficulties dealing with that. I don't know if he's having difficulties, they say, and I know you had written a little bit about that, but I really would like to talk somewhat about that. So I think we should start off with you telling us what a helicopter parent is.
Well, a helicopter parent has become a negative term where I'm not sure it really necessarily should be. A lot of it emanates from the fact that a lot of people, particularly in the academic world, are concerned that parents are too involved in their kids' lives. And therefore, because they're too involved in their kids' lives, according to that strain of thought, they don't let go of their kids. And when their kids go off to college, not only are the parents emotionally distraught, but many parents actually keep coming back to campus, call their students' professors, make sure that the roommate pairings are okay. And, of course, the question comes down to, what's appropriate and what's not appropriate and who's making that determination.
Well, I should be.
Yes, you should be.
Have you seen extremes? Can you give some examples of extremes that you've found?
Well, there are extremes, and you're right. And it's funny that you suggest that you should be, but I think the answer is that you should be. And who's ever listening to this right now should be as well, because every mom, every dad, every parent, every grandparent has to come up with, what's comfortable and what works for their families. And there are different levels of independence that's appropriate, different levels that are appropriate at different times. Now, just because you think it's appropriate for your family doesn't necessarily mean that the university is going to think it's appropriate.
Right, right.
And that's where there's some dynamic tension here, where one of the key things that we always talk about in the admissions world is that we want to give our students roots and wings. We want to give them the roots that they are grounded, and this is where parental involvement is so important, and being a good parent is so important, and good relationships with your kids are so important. But we also want to give kids the ability to have wings and to fly off and to do things independent of their families. And it's a little bit of a delicate dance. So on one hand, I think what you want to do is you want to be free to engage your student as they become a college student, but also give them the freedom to explore things without necessarily thinking that their parents are looking over their shoulder every 2 minutes or 3 minutes.
Yeah. One of the greatest things actually is texting, because my son, I can connect with him. When I see like a yeah or hey or something, my heart like sings. I know he's okay. He's alive. He's clearly not in some kind of distress. So in some ways, I think text has become a great way to have that little delicate thread between you, where you're not imposing too much of yourself.
Well, I think that's fair. But not every parent would necessarily agree with that statement. Some parents feel that they really want to physically be near their child. I mean, I've had some clients over the years who have, you know, done everything they can to make sure their student doesn't go to a school that's more than a 3 or a 5 hour drive away, simply because they want to be connected to their student. Now, of course, I've had the opposite, where students have done, after all was said and done, they only wanted to go to schools that were more than 1,000 miles away.
Right.
So you have to be careful here, because there, at least from my position, whose emotional needs are we satisfying? Are we satisfying the parents' emotional needs or the students' emotional needs? And when I'm going through the admissions process as an educational advisor, I've got my primary fiduciary responsibility is to the student. I've got to make sure that a student is going to an academic environment that's going to make that student happy and thrive.
Right.
But I also have a responsibility to the parents to make sure that they're comfortable with this transition, because it definitely is a transition, and it's one that it does involve the family, because if you don't take that into account, this is going to be a very rough ride, particularly in freshman year.
It's really hard. I have to tell you, I walk around with like a lump in my throat all the time, and he's happy. But it's really interesting, on Friday, because I guess I control the bank account and I can see what he's spending and not. He let me know that he said, "What would you say if I told you I was going to go away for 2 days, like a 2 hour trip?" And I thought it was really funny because he really doesn't. He thought I would know because I'd know what he was spending, but it was just funny because I sensed he just kind of still wanted that permission that it was okay, even though he's technically free to do what he wants to do because I'm not there. So it made me feel good to know that he was asking me, but I kind of understand that he's probably going through some stuff himself, even though he seems happy to be independent.
Well, sure, you're right. I mean, it's a new beginning for both of you. And, you know, in some ways it's the end of an era or an end of a period that you had as a mom and a son.
Oh, it's horrible. Horrible.
But it's also a new beginning. And not to take the pain away, or not to take the pain that you feel, or the emotional pain, or some of the longings you feel, but it is a new beginning. And one of the things that I counsel my students to think about is to understand that their parents are going to go through a tough time. And then I spend a lot of time with parents trying to make sure that they understand that, at least in my view, that they need to take care of themselves as people, not just as parents. And while it's okay to constantly miss your son, but I think it's also important to step back and say, you know, I'm a person, and I happen to be a mom, but I'm a person as well, and I do need to kind of have a focus of what I'm doing now. And that doesn't mean that I don't love my son, and that doesn't mean that I'm not going to always love my son. But I think it is healthy to step back and say, okay, what do I do from here? And this is also important in terms of relationships with parents as well. A lot of times people come to me after their kids have gone off to school in freshman year, the time that we're talking about right now in your life, when the parents kind of look at each other in my office and say, well, what now? You know,
right.
We just sent our student off to school X or school Y. Everything is fine, but we're a little bit lost. And the reason some families are lost is because in the last 17 years they've been focused, especially if there's only an only child, there's a focus on that child. And now what happens? What do you do now? Where do you take your lives as adults? It's 40-year-olds or 45-year-olds or 50-year-olds. What do you do now?
Well, you know, that brings up another issue separate from the couple issue, which I agree is stressful. But with his going off to this new phase of his life makes me realize I'm getting older. It really, you know, because there's the end of this entire part of life. But I happen to be almost 55. I think there's really almost two generations of parents having children go off to school. There are people who are in their early 40s, and there are people in their mid-50s, you know, like me. So for me, it's also pointing up, oh, my God, you know, you're getting older there. So it's another issue, I think, that's part of it.
Well, I think that's fair. I mean, you know, but not to be trite about it, but it's better than the alternative.
It's so true.
You know, so I think that it's good that you're recognizing that. On the other hand, I mean, let's face it. I mean, 55 is not 40, and 40 is not 55. But there are a lot of things that there's a lot of wisdom that you've gained in the last 15 years that you're probably very happy that you've gained.
Oh, it's true. And I'm just saying that it just makes you think about your mortality a little bit because, you know, I look at him, he's not my baby anymore. It'll never be the same. And so, and consequently with his leaving, aside from having to look at your partner if you do have one, you do have to look at, oh my gosh, now I really have to face where I'm going with my life, like you were just saying.
And that does underscore that because, you know, I think that's healthy. I think it's healthy to have those, in the same way that I help students do that, I encourage parents to do that as well. There's nothing wrong with you at age 55 thinking about, well, what am I doing with my life? Am I happy with what I'm doing? Am I happy with the things that are going on? Am I happy with where I am physically, emotionally, intellectually? What do I want to do? I mean, yes, at 55, it's probably unlikely that you're going to, you know, do something that's going to get you to be in the Olympics tomorrow. But that doesn't mean that you can't write a book. That doesn't mean that you can't, do things that you've always wanted to do. In fact, you may find that the extra time that you have now, because your son or daughter is off at college, is going to be helpful. And I give that advice to a lot of parents.
Hmm. So when you have someone in your office where they're looking for a college for their child, and you see this kind of disparity where the parent wants the child to be close to home and the child wants to go far off, I mean, you really are a psychologist a licensed psychologist, but there's a lot of psychology and reading people where you have to understand how to meld what each side wants, kind of, correct?
Absolutely. Well, you know, but even though I'm not a real psychologist, my co-author actually is a real psychologist, mm-hmm. and that's why I teamed up with her for this book. So my book is a kind of combination of admissions thinking and psychological thinking as it relates to the transition that families go through from, when families launch their children to college. So it is a little bit of that. But there's a lot of psychology involved in this. But to answer your question specifically, what do I do in that instance? In that instance, I pose that to the family. And I say, you know, from what I hear one of you saying X and one of you hearing Y. Let's talk about that and let's resolve it. And a lot of families are very uncomfortable doing that because they've never really expressed those thoughts in front of their son or daughter or in front of their parents. And it's a little uncomfortable initially for the first couple of minutes, but then I think it's very empowering because it's kind of the elephant in the room, and I think it's helpful to discuss it. It's a little bit like money issues. A lot of times people come in and dance around the question of tuition or dance around the question of loans when they don't want to discuss that in front of their children. But for a lot of schools that cost $200,000 a year, that's not an insignificant issue. And so the question is, how do you address it and when do you address it and in what form?
I think the service you do is really valuable. Having just gone through it without your service, I could see it would have been helpful to do this because I don't think, you know, you just think, well, when I went off to college, I had my own perspective and the world was way different then. I don't think I realized all the layers of issues that we're going to be part of this and what you're describing. That's great that you can help lead people to get some peace and insight and maybe even strengthen their bonds. I think you're really helpful in that way.
Well, and, I hope so. Thank you.
Yeah.
I try to.
So when we're talking about money and tuition, that is another big issue. Even for me, I had done a prepaid college, and I'm like, oh, I'm in good shape. And then suddenly, 4 months before school, I saw all the other fees, and tuition was about the least of it. And it was a paralyzing moment, you know, because when you don't really understand all else that's involved. And I've had to talk to my son about getting a job. And so how do you talk to families about how they should handle the tuition issue with their child or how much they should talk to their child about it?
Well, I'm on one side of this debate. I mean, I think that students ought to know what this costs. And I think that it's not unfair to bring students in, and while they may not be able to appreciate what $10,000 means to have it in their pocket today, I think students who are smart enough to go off to college are smart enough to understand that this is a sacrifice for their families. And I think it's fair to bring that into the discussion. one of the things I do is I explain what a loan is, and I explain what a loan is in terms of paying it back. And if you were to borrow, this rule of thumb that says that if you borrow about $7,500 in terms of a student loan, you're going to be paying back about $100 a month for a good chunk of time. And well, what does it mean to pay back $100 a month? And let's say you borrow $15,000. Now you're paying back $200 a month. A student can almost see and feel $200 more than they can feel $10,000.
Right, right.
And so I think it's helpful to bring that into focus and to say, okay, if you were to go to the more expensive school X than less expensive school Y, here's what it would mean for us as a family. I, as your mom, maybe am willing to kick in a little bit more or take out some more loans, but you're going to have to take some of that responsibility as well. So I think that's one way of handling it. And the other way of handling it is to look at universities that are likely to give you more generous financial aid packages.
Right.
But of course, the problem with that is that often the school that you want to go to is the school that other people want to go to, and that school has very little economic incentive to give you an attractive aid package.
Right. You know, you brought up an interesting point about the sacrifice. I have a lot of guilt because when I grew up, it was not there was no talk of sacrifice. It was expected. My parents would pay for college. That was the end of it. And it is a very hard thing for me to adjust to the fact that, well, my son may have to help out. I don't know if you've come across or how much you come across that, but it's a very different mindset now. It's more of a partnership in some ways. And to me, it was just expected. It never occurred to me I'd have to work to go to school,
You alluded to the fact that it was a different time. Well, it was a different time for a lot of reasons, but one of the key reasons is the tuition. And if you were to look at the tuition to when you were in school, and you take the same university today, you'll see that the tuition is probably between 3 to 5 times as high.
Wow.
And so when you were a student, yes, it might have been possible for you to work at McDonald's for a little while and earn some pocket money and have that go a long way. For a student right now who's facing a tuition bill and fees of $50,000, a few hundred dollars doesn't really make much of a dent in that.
Right.
And so, you know, it's not unreasonable to then question whether or not it's even possible for a student to do that, and therefore you have to look at the total package, and therefore, you're right, it does move into this arena of it being a paradigmatic shift, of it being more of a partnership.
Hmm. So if you were going to advise somebody, I mean, we made the choice that he was going to go to state school because the kind of career he wants didn't necessarily mean that he needed an Ivy League type of degree, and financially, I think we're going to get through, I'm hoping, without taking a loan out. How would you help somebody make a decision like that, whether it was worth it to really go to a school that was going to put you into an extreme amount of debt, or if there was a way to do it without?
Well, I think there's a continuum here. Is it a little bit of debt? Is it an extreme amount of debt? If you know with 90% accuracy that you're going to be a nurse, and or you're going to be a teacher in an inner city school district somewhere in the United States,
right,
then does it make sense to take out $100,000 worth of debt,
right,
for an undergraduate degree? I'm not sure it does.
That was our situation. My son wants to be a music teacher, and I said, you can go to a good state school that has a good music program and get a decent education, because like you had said before, I don't think he got the concept of how much his debt ratio is going to be to what he's going to earn, right?
Well, yes and no. I mean, there are plenty of private schools, though, that, you know, for people who are listening to this who perhaps have a student who's a sophomore or a junior, and you know, let's say you're interested in music, and let's say Oberlin College in Ohio pops onto your radar screen, which is a terrific school.
Right.
And has a great music program in a lot of ways. I'm not sure I'd throw that school out right away because of the tuition, because Oberlin has a history of giving somewhat reasonable financial aid packages to families who demonstrate a real need. So it's possible, and I don't have any positive or negative things precisely mm-hmm. about Oberlin. I'm
right,
just using
right,
that
just
as
an example. Sure.
But Oberlin, and it is possible that you will actually end up paying less for an expensive private school than you would for a state school if the private school gives you a generous package. Now, of course, your follow-up question would probably be, well, how do we know that the school is going to give you a generous financial package? And you don't, but it doesn't mean you can't try. And if you apply to expensive private school X or Y, and they don't give you a package, then you don't have to take it.
Right.
But if they do give you an attractive package, then you may be pleasantly surprised. I've had plenty of students go to some very expensive schools and pay very little money because they were so attractive to the university.
Hmm. Well, okay. So all in all, if you're talking to parents who maybe their kids are seniors right now in high school, the main issues that you think they should be starting to look at in as far as the financial issues and the emotional issues, I mean, to start to prepare, do you have any suggestions or recommendations?
Well, I think those are two separate questions. I mean, the issue of the financial issues, I think you should lay the groundwork for those discussions sometimes even in junior year.
Okay.
Because I think it's important to have those discussions with kids. In terms of the emotional component, most of the time, my students are more prepared than their parents are.
Right.
And what I try to remind my families about is to be really careful about the messages that you're communicating to your kids. And sometimes they're subtle and sometimes they're not so subtle. Be really careful about what you're saying. Be really careful about what you're kind of saying subtly. And what that means in English is explain to them that, you know, you're having a tough emotional time and you understand this is going to be a transition, but you value their independence, you value their creativity, you value their happiness, and you as a parent are going to try to do all you can to make sure that they can have it all. But you are not going to be in a position to make sure they do have it all, and that ultimately a lot of that is going to fall on the shoulders of the students, and that I as a mom or I as a dad, I'll do the best I can for you, but our relationship is going to change. And of course, your student knew that already, and sometimes students smile when parents say that to them because the kids, you know, say, yes, I knew that, Mom. I've been thinking about that for 2 years.
Right,
I'm so
right.
Glad you finally said it.
Yeah.
So this is not a bad time for parents to open up to their kids because you don't want to surprise kids about this. Especially in the admissions process, there's a lot of uncertainty going on the part of the student. Remember, for a student who's gone to, let's say, a public school for 12 years, this may be the first time a student's ever been evaluated in a competitive admissions environment.
Right.
And so students are a little bit nervous, and let's say you're good at the theater. How do we know how good you are at the theater? Or let's say you believe that you're pretty good at soccer. Well, we're going to find out how good you are because the coach is going to determine whether or not you're an appealing player or not. Or the admissions office more generally. I mean, how strong an applicant are you relative to the rest of the applicant pool?
You know, it almost seems that in the senior year, the student is the one who's more fragile, and in the freshman year of college, it's the parent who's more fragile, you know?
That's fair. That's fair. As a rule of thumb, I think that's fair.
So, okay, if you were going to say how to not give your child, like, guilt, I mean, I know there are times that my son's like, I really don't want to hear about how much you miss me anymore. It's so hard. Do you have any rule of thumb about how much guilt you can put on your kid? Or not, guilt isn't the right word, but, you know, yearning, dumping your yearning onto your child.
Well, yes, actually, I do. I call it the once-a-week rule.
Oh, no.
Where what you, and that may not be enough for you.
Oh, no.
But you want to hold this to maybe a dinner conversation. I usually start this kind of guilt / helicoptering / parenting discussion in the admissions process, but it extends to freshman year as well, where my advice is to take a time in your family calendar. I usually would recommend Sunday night dinner, where you ask your student how things are going in the admissions process and how things are going generally in that regard, because if you do it more than that, students are going to be afraid of coming home, that, you know, so that mom or dad is just going to keep asking, well, did you do the application yet? Did you do the essay yet? Did you finish this yet? And students don't want to hear that. They would like to know that they have some autonomy in that. But using that Sunday dinner to also talk about the emotional component, because you don't want to do too much and keep sending the message to your student that I'm going to miss you, but you can almost joke with each other that says, okay, on Sunday, I'm going to bother you about the applications, and I'm going to bother you about how much I'm going to miss you next year.
Oh, you know, that was exactly what I did wrong. I did that entirely wrong. His senior year, I did everything you said not to do, and it made him nuts. And in the end, it didn't matter because he did what he wanted to do and got in where he wanted to go, and it all ended up being okay, and we had way more aggravation than we needed to have, really, during that time. But,
I wasn't there for that, so I can't speak to that. But, all I can do is recommend that people try to, if you possibly can, contain this a little bit, because it'll be healthier for both the parent and for the student.
It's true. But now that he's gone, it is really hard to, each time, it's the same thing that you're talking about. If each time I'm going to talk about missing him and did you do this, did you do that, I know you're right. The school even lectured us about it, that parents need to let their kids fall a little bit. And that is a very hard thing to do when you're used to scooping them up.
It's very hard. And I don't mean to minimize how hard it is. I know that just by saying it's hard doesn't take the pain away, but I think you really ought to do all you can to contain that. And if you have to let it out, do it once a week.
Right.
Or, in your case, maybe call your son and say, or text your son and say, we're going to have a venting session every Sunday at noon.
Yeah, that's a good idea. If I could get him.
And start it that way.
Well, this has been really interesting. And do you have any final thoughts that you want to share about this that I haven't asked you?
Well, I guess my one thing that I'd leave you with, if I may, is to smile when you're having this discussion, and smile when you're listening to this, and smile and think that, I did a good job. I did a good job raising my son. I did a good job raising my daughter. And this is a new beginning. And yes, I know it's a transition, and yes, it's painful for me, and yes, it's painful for my spouse, and yes, it's painful for my son or daughter, and of course, all these things that we've been talking about. And there is some pain, and there is some, and it's a real transition. But it's also a new beginning. And in the same way that the sun really does come up tomorrow, it does make sense to think about this in an enjoyable way, and to say, I now have the world in front of me, in the same way that you can learn a new language, you can learn a new skill, you can learn a new instrument, you can learn something new that you had never thought you even knew, that you didn't even know existed before. And in the same way that a student has that freedom at the University of ABC, you as a parent also have that freedom. And I think it's important to take advantage of that freedom and to enjoy it. It doesn't lessen the pain all the time, but I think it really does help you along the way, and it does help you grow as a person, whether you're 40 years old, you're 45 years old, you're 50 years old, or you're 55 years old. And I think you should go forward and enjoy and take this time and look at this as a positive time in your family's history and take it from there.
It is true, and I love the fact, Steve, that you are taking this process holistically and not just looking at it as a cold, hard, what college is the best. I think it's great that you're really trying to look at the entirety of the family and what's going to be best to help them balance as the child moves out into his or her life. So I think you're doing a great job. This is Steve Goodman, and Steve, do you want to give your contact information again so people can get in touch with you?
Sure, I'll be glad to. Again, first of all, Susan, thank you very much for having me on your show. And thank you all for listening to this, and hopefully this has been helpful. To reach me, again, it's Steve Goodman. I'm an educational consultant and admission strategist. And the book that we're talking about today is College Admissions Together, It Takes a Family. And my website is www.topcolleges.com. My direct email, feel free to email me at steve@topcolleges.com. And finally, my phone number is 202-986-9431.
Thank you so much again, Steve. And hopefully a lot of people will find the help with you that they can use for their family to effectively get through this admissions process. You've been listening to Midlife Woman Radio. You can find us on the web at www.midlifewomanradio.com or give us a call on our 24-hour vent line at 561-372-1119, and we may just play your comments on the air.